Thurgood Marshall is perhaps best known as the first African-American justice on the Supreme Court, where he served from 1967 to 1991. But he had a long history of working for justice. As an attorney for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, he waged legal battles against racial discrimination that helped reshape American society. A new collection of letters from that period offers a new portrait of Thurgood Marshall as an important force in the civil rights movement. Rosa Parks' refusal to give up her seat on a segregated bus in Montgomery, Alabama in 1955, and Martin Luther King Jr.'s leadership of the black boycott of the city's public transportation system are considered pivotal events in the struggle for civil rights. But almost 20 years before that, a young attorney with the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP, laid the groundwork for the movement's success.
Martin Luther King Jr. emerged as the most important civil rights leader in the latter half of the 20th century exactly because of Thurgood Marshall's work in the 20 years that led up to 1955.
Michael Long is author of Marshalling Justice, the early civil rights letters of Thurgood Marshall.
It's unfair to believe that King just emerged out of nowhere. He emerged out of a culture and society that had already begun to break down racial discrimination. In fact, Rosa Parks was a member of the NAACP. Right after the crisis started in Montgomery, Marshall pledged the support of the NAACP. He also encouraged those leaders in Montgomery, including King, to attack segregation on buses. The initial complaint by the African-American leaders was that they weren't getting courteous treatment on the buses. And Marshall said, well, that's not good enough. We need to attack segregation on the buses.
Long says the letters Thurgood Marshall wrote between 1936 and 1957 reveal the depth and breadth of his civil rights work.
The basic idea behind the letter is this. Let's get rid of segregation. He played the role of the African-American male in the South at that time in the sense that he ate in segregated restaurants, he drove in segregated taxis, and he played the role of a segregated black man in order to further the cause. He never wanted to draw attention to himself, as he put it. He wanted to fight for the cause.
Marshall used everything from points of law to righteous indignation to make his case. In a letter to the New Mexico Department of Education about segregated schools in the city of Alamogordo, he wrote, "It seems that the one school for Negroes in Alamogordo is taught by one teacher who teaches grades from the first grade through the junior high school. It's almost unbelievable that in this modern system of education, one teacher can be expected to be proficient in teaching all grades from the first grade to the junior high school at the same time and in the same small building."
Marshall was a great letter writer. He would sit down at the typewriter and just pound out a letter. He also wrote them on a yellow legal pad and blue ink, but he wrote letters to all the major personalities of his day. He wrote to presidents. He wrote to politicians.
He wrote to generals. In 1940, as war raged in Europe, he complained about segregated wards in military veterans' hospitals to the Administrator of Veteran Affairs, General Frank Hines, highlighting the relationship between democracy and racial justice. It is to be regretted that this type of discrimination should exist in any project using federal funds exclusively, he wrote. With the present unsettled conditions throughout Europe, the United States is itself on trial as the last proving ground for democracy. Marshall also wrote to everyday African Americans who were struggling against racial discrimination, especially in the South.
Some of the letters that ended up on his desk are very illiterate. They're full of misspellings and typos. It's very difficult to read some of those letters. It's just difficult to figure out what they're saying. Marshall would sit at his desk and he would read those letters very carefully and he would craft a beautiful response to them and mail a letter back. In some of the letters that he wrote, we can see a very compassionate, warm, sensitive side of Marshall that we don't normally see.
Among those letters is one he wrote in 1938 to Ruth Perry, whose 19-year-old son and another young black man had been convicted of murdering a white man and sentenced to death.
Dear Mrs. Perry, we have received a letter from Judge Monroe telling us that the State Prison and Parole Commission on November 15 refused to grant clemency in the case of your son. Judge Monroe has done all that he possibly can do in this case. He has not only carried the case through courts and to the appeal courts, but he has also gone to the Parole Commission and the governor. Under our legislative system, there is nothing further that can possibly be done in this case. Judge Monroe in his letter stated to us that he was more than sorry that the lives of these boys could not be saved, but on the other hand, there was nothing further that could be done.
Long says it's important for younger generations to read these letters and learn about the man whose work still impacts lives.
I think we can see how it's shaped history today if we look at the White House and we see who is there. I think we can trace the presence of President Obama to Marshall's work. I think President Obama is a very rich legacy of the civil rights work of Thurgood Marshall. Marshall worked for that not only here in the United States, but also worldwide. He assisted some countries in drafting their constitution, Kenya, for example. Marshall played a leading role in helping people think about liberty, freedom, and equal justice under law.
And because liberty, freedom, and equality are basic rights, Marshalling Justice author Michael Long says he hopes Thurgood Marshall's words will continue to inspire people everywhere in their battles for justice. For writer Faiza El Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News, Washington.